Our podcast will begin in just a moment. Our distribution is made possible by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. If you haven't signed up to be an InvestTalk Insider, well, you're missing out on a lot of free information, useful lists and webinars, and a new info sheet called Can You Afford That House? The 12 Costs of Home Ownership. It's easy and it's free to sign up. Just go to investtalk.com and scroll down the page until you see Sign Up for Free to become an InvestTalk Insider. And now, today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday edition of InvestTalk. It is June 16th, 2016, so it's 6-16-16. We're all about above-average investing for the average investor, as you know. Everyone is looking for opportunities in all aspects of life, aren't we? And searching for good investments is no different. The problem most investors have is that they have a narrow view, putting their assets to work, hoping the value rises. But in fact, assets also fall. And when they fall, there could be opportunities. Now, as you know, there's three things you can do with assets. You can buy them, you can sell them, or you can hold them. And buying gives you the potential to earn a return on your money, but it also exposes you to risk of losing that money. Selling allows you to take risk off the table. Selling also gives you fresh powder to potentially invest in new opportunities, but it also eliminates any potential gain from the assets you sold. This is not rocket science. Holding allows you to reap cash flows and profits over time, which usually provides some type of return if you purchase the asset at a reasonable price. That's a key. You gotta buy right. But it's also, when you own it and hold it, it ties up that precious capital that you worked so hard to get. And maybe you could use that capital for something better if you just hold on to something else. But you have more opportunities. You can't invest because you're holding. It's always the same. Always. By the way, that's called, in economic terms, called opportunity cost. When you lose, you don't have the money or assets to buy something because you're already invested. It's opportunity cost. At different times in any market, all three options can be valid: buying, holding, selling. And depending on your time horizon and your risk tolerance, would you buy, hold, or sell? It is your job to identify the opportunities in the marketplace, and sometimes that involves simply holding tight with your current positions. In other situations, it means you need to buy more, deploy fresh cash. And then at others, it means that you need to liquidate assets, hold on to cash. And going to cash and holding that cash can be a form of opportunity, even though many people never view it that way. Usually when the masses believe buying an asset is an opportunity, but the odds are good that that true opportunity is to sell. You don't want to follow the herd. You don't want to follow the herd over the cliff. You don't want to just be a follower. You want to be an independent thinker. That may mean you are going with the herd, but you want to be an independent thinker. You don't want to be part of the masses. Try to be nimble. Try to look for opportunities. Not just buying things. It's not just about that. Okay, I'll stop my preacher. I'll get off my soapbox here. Do you have questions about finding opportunities? When to sell, when to buy, when to hold on? You can reach me right now at 24-hour listener line. It's always on 888-99-CHART. You can call anytime. So let's answer. Let's go ahead and answer a question.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. Big fan of the show. Raphael from Jersey. Had a question about what I heard Steve say tonight to a caller about Walmart. You were saying to hold it long term, it'll be fine and great. And I had a question about that. I'm thinking that a company like Walmart has basically apex. I mean, where else are they going to put a Walmart, right? It's fully expanded. Now, another large cap stock that I think can continue to make all-time highs is someone like Honeywell, where they can spin off divisions or things like this. But I don't know what Walmart would be able to do at this point. I mean, that whole cost-cutting, ultimate saving thing has played its course, I'm thinking. I don't know. I wanted to get your opinion on that. as a general rule, these big established companies, don't you think there's a point where they just can't grow anymore? That's what I was kind of curious about. Thanks. I love the show. Have a great day.
Good question. Good observation. Yes, Walmart will have a hard time growing, but we're not talking about a growth stock. We're talking about a big blue chip stock. What do you do about big blue chip stocks? You hold them for the dividends. You try to buy them when they go on sale, and you hold them for the dividends. And that's what we're talking about Walmart. It was Walmart on sale when it fell down to, below what? Around, let's see, what was this? What was that price? I got to type that in. I still have, looking at the dollar here. Okay, when it was selling at the very beginning of the year, around $59 or so, was that a good price, $59.60? I thought so. Okay, so now it's $71. I wouldn't think so now. I don't know if I would buy it now. But look at the price. Look what it was. Right now, the PE is 16. It's growing its earnings next year by 4%. But this year, it's going to go down 8. Sales are only creeping around 0 to 1% to minus 1% growth and shrinkage. So it's kind of flat. So you're right. So why would you want to own it? Well, because it has a great return on equity of 18%, has huge cash flow, can continue to increase its dividends, is paying 2.8% now. I don't think I'd be a buyer of it at this point. But if you own it, I would hold it. So you got to separate growth stocks from big blue chip dividend paying stocks, core holdings. And so you're talking about, well, why wouldn't I want to buy something that's growing faster? Well, yeah, you would want to, but you should have a part of your portfolio in a core holding, which would be a Walmart. Now, if you think Walmart's not going to be around 10, 20 years from now, then it wouldn't be a core holding. But I think they still will be able to increase their dividends. I also think that they'll slowly creep up their sales. And that's what I like about Walmart. Doesn't mean I'll hold it forever, by the way. If it gets overvalued, I can see myself selling it. Yeah, that means I made both my dividend and some capital gains. Let's also try to answer questions sent in through text format, which is becoming more popular. Hi, Michael from South Florida. I've enjoyed your show on podcast for a year now and learned a lot. You have shared the metrics of how to choose a stock, but I'm limited in my 457. To mutual funds, and 457 is remember there's a 401k, 403b, 457, I think it's for public employees. So what metrics would you use to choose a set of mutual funds? Which is also a very good question. And when you buy mutual funds, you start to compare peer group performance. So the peer group of the fund that you're in, you're going to compare that with other exact same types of funds. You look at risk versus reward, and Morningstar.com is a good website to take a look at, and you can compare the funds that do the exact same thing and manager against manager and see how much risk. Do they take more risk or average risk, and what has there been the reward? Because, you know, when you start talking about mutual funds, they're not all in, you know, the S&P 500 funds. They might be growth stocks or value stocks, small cap, mid cap. They might be different kinds of classes. So you kind of have to compare them with each other. Okay, and that's the only thing you really can do. You start looking at the managers of those funds because you're relying on them. You're relying on the managers to do a good job. So you have to really look at the managers, look at the performance, look at what kind of risks they're taking to get that performance. Do they do what they say they do? There's many large cap funds that have small cap stocks in it, but they're supposed to be a large cap fund. Well, and then they might outperform or underperform because of those small caps. And then you get caught up with, oh, that was a great fund. Look how much it made. And compared to its peer group, it's made a lot more. But maybe it cheated by buying small cap stocks that grew very fast, and it was a good timing on their part. See, there's a lot to look at for a mutual fund. There is a lot. Now, over time, the risk level in your portfolio can increase or decrease without you even knowing it. the Critical Balancing Act. And that's going to be one of our talking points today, our main talking point. Also, I have a chart of the countries with negative interest rates. And then it's a matrix of 1 year to 30-year bonds and which ones have negative interest rates with which countries. And I think you'd be surprised as the country that has the most negative yields on the most bonds, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, all the way up to 30 years. I don't think you would guess which country that is. But I got a list of all the countries that have negative rates. I'm going to give you all of them. I think that'd be interesting. Morgan Stanley says that they fear policymakers are making the exact same mistakes they made during the Great Depression. What are those mistakes? And older workers over 50, one out of two of them think they will be working when they're 70. But I don't think they're going to be able to work. There's some surveys out there we're talking about. And I never did get to yesterday on net neutrality and what that means. And I hope to get to that too today before the end of the show. The market was up today. And it really looked like it was going to be a down day. I mean, it was down triple digits on the Dow. And it ended up being up 93 points by the end of the day. I wonder if that's a strong reversal day. Now, how do you tell a strong reversal day? Well, you look at the volume and see if there's a lot of more volume that came in on the reverse. And the answer would be no, it was not. There was more volume on the several down days we had recently than today's reversal day. So that doesn't bode well, or it's not telling us that the market is that strong. So the Dow was up 93, the NASDAQ was up 10, and the S&P up 6. And that broke, what, a five-day losing streak? I thought there was going to be a six-day today, but we didn't get it. So, the market's the market, everybody. It's been flat to down well over a year now. Flat to down well over a year. So are we ever going to get out of this doldrums? Someday we're going to break out of these doldrums we're in. But will we break up or break down? I got to get out my crystal ball and have it tell me. And it would be very good if that same crystal ball could tell me when it would do that. We're glad you're with us today for Invest Talk. When you're an Invest Talk insider, you have new opportunities to learn with concise, simplified reports written personally by me, myself, and Justin. These reports. Important topics, annuities, wills, trusts, retirement programs, life insurance. And we also have updated ETF lists. And we have more webinars. If you want to become a member, it's really, really simple. It doesn't cost anything. All you have to do is sign up. That's it. Go to investtalk.com.
Here are the directions for reaching Steve this afternoon with your question. Just call 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T. Have a question about how best to get into the market? Or maybe you're feeling unsure about your current investments. That's what this is all about. This is Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART. Why don't we go and talk to Brandon in Mill Valley. How you doing, Brandon?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I would volunteer Switzerland on the negative rates.
You know, that's exactly right. They're the number one with the negative rates. Every year of their debt from 1 to 20 years is negative. Only their 30 years positive. And 30 year pays 0.04%, Brandon. You're going to hold something for 30 years and make 0.04% per year. That is insane. Just insane.
That sounds good for gold, though.
It does, doesn't it? It sure does, and gold has done very well, which is frustrating today. I was pretty happy this morning because did you see that gold was up huge this morning, Brandon? And then it gave it all back.
Yeah, it didn't hold over that 13.
Nope, it did not. It gave it all back and more. Oh, well. Oh, well. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I was calling about VNR, Vanguard Natural Resources.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Do you want to buy it, or do you already own it?
I don't own it, and it looks attractive to me. due to the hedge. You know, they should be able to turn around earnings even ahead of oil prices.
Well, Vanguard Natural Resources is engaged in exploration and production of oil, natural gas in Texas, New Mexico, Wyoming, Montana, here in the United States, in the Midwest a lot. And they've been losing sales sharply for four quarters in a row, 20 to 40% loss of sales each quarter. And they're going to make 35 cents this year, but they're going to lose a penny a share next year. So it really is something. This is a high-risk play, Brandon, high risk because of that. They're only a $149 million company, so they don't have a lot of assets. You know, they don't have a lot of strength. I wouldn't buy it because it's too risky for me. It's a very high risk. It's one of those gambling kind of stocks. If it works, you'll make a ton of money. If it doesn't, they'll go bankrupt. Appreciate the call, though. Thanks, Brandon. You're listening to Invest Talk. If you would like a short list of ETFs that hold a broad mix of dividend-paying stocks, give me a call. Send me an email. I'll send it to you. You're listening to Invest Talk. 888-992-4278. Let's go talk to Chase in New York. How you doing, Chase?
Hey, good. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you about STNG, Scorpio Tankers.
Okay.
And also just kind of the oil and gas transportation service companies in general. They've all just been really beat up, and some of them making new lows and stuff. And so I just want to know your thoughts on it.
To me, it looks like it's developing into an opportunity, Chase. You know, I don't know if caught the front part of the show, but you know, you like to look for opportunities, and it looks like to me some of these tanker companies look like opportunities. I have a feeling most analysts would say, oh, they look terrible, don't go. But Scorpio Tankers, let's take a look at that. It's $820 million company, so it's a small cap company. It's not a micro cap, it's small. And the reason why it's small is because the price of it is went down to $4.74. Now, as I look at it, they provide seaborne transportation services for crude oil and petroleum products with a fleet of 78 vehicles. And of course, these companies got killed because the oil went down so sharply. But oil's going to come back. Everybody knows that, right? If you don't know it, there's something wrong with you. So the only worry you have is to try to buy this at the lowest possible price, and will the company survive? I mean, we're looking at it's going to make $1.21. It made $1.21 last year per share. It's going to make 74 cents a share this year and 82 cents a share next year. So it's making money. You know, that's one of my bugaboos. You don't buy companies that don't make money. It's really, really cheap. The P.E. ratio for the last 5 years is 4 to 312. And what is it now? $4.74. And it's going to make 82 cents a share. So what is that, 5 PE next year?
Yeah.
So I think what you're looking at, you see it's fallen sharply the last few days, okay? So it's now right there.
Yeah, I've been watching it. It's down. And it's starting to kind of curl a little. I don't know.
So what you want to do, this may or may not be the low, but what you want to do is wait a couple of weeks. Don't be too rash here. See if you wanted to see it trade sideways. You want to see if it finds support somewhere. And it hasn't found that yet. Wait for that support. Okay?
Okay.
Appreciate the call. That's STNG, Scorpio Tankers. Return on equity 17%. Cash flow is strong at $2.23. I don't know if they can maintain the dividend of 10.5%. I don't know if they can do that. It's going to be pretty tough, but they have the cash to do it. They can do it. So I think it's an opportunity developing. Now, your biggest worry is that it has debt. Check out the debt. Can it support the debt? That's your biggest worry. Anyways, 888-99-CHARTER is our number. Love to talk to you. 888-992-4278. Let's go talk to Saeed in Oakland. How you doing, Saeed?
Hello.
Hi, Saeed. How's it going? Go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, you hear me?
Yeah, hi. This is Saeed. Yeah, I have. Please take you. Ask you about the Netflix.
You know, it looks like once you're taking that stock, because it's like being at up and down, like, you know, 2 point up, 2 point down, it looks like in jail. Mm-hmm. When would be a good time to buy it?
I still think it's way too expensive. It's too expensive for me. They're going to make, they made 31 cents a share last year. They're going to make 27 cents a share this year. But next year, it's going to jump up to $1.04, up 285%. So it's $1.04 next year, and it's a $95 stock. So that means the PE is 89, 90. And it's growing its sales about 20 to 25% per quarter, and that's been pretty consistent. And that's one of the reasons why it is expensive, that consistent growth of sales. Everybody's fallen in love with it. For me, it's just too expensive. Netflix, everybody, NFLX, it provides internet subscription services to watch TV shows and movies, and, you know, and it's a great company, $40 billion company, doing very well, no dividend. Return on equity is only 7%, though. It's not. I'm not impressed with the numbers, and the stock price is too high. I would wait for the next big pull down of Netflix before I consider buying it. It's just too expensive, Saeed. That's what I think. But, of course, it's been expensive and stays expensive, but I'm a value plus growth investor. I want value, and there's, you know, it's hard for me to see the value in Netflix at this point. Okay? Appreciate the call, Saeed. Thank you. NFLX, everybody. NFLX. Okay. Switzerland has the most negative rates. They're 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, 5 year, 6 year, all the way up to 20 year, all negative. Then Japan, they're 15 years negative, 1 year to the 15. Germany, Australia, Netherlands, Belgium, Finland, France, Sweden, Denmark, Ireland, Italy, and Spain all have negative rates. Every one of those. Spain only is negative rate in 1 year, their one year government debt bond. But they all have negative rates, every one of them. That is not going to stand, everybody. It can't. Where do you go for money answers? We hope you think of us. I do. I really do. Call anytime you want and record your question at 888-99-CHART or send a note to me directly. Click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com. That's an email that I get.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Gaining knowledge in the investment world is a never-ending process, and these selected books will help you build a stronger foundation of knowledge. Visit our recommended books section on investtalk.com. Read about the books that you should be reading. Continue now with this Thursday, June 16th, Invest Talk. Invest Talk insiders have a key to a vault full of webinars on important and timely investing topics like the New America, presentation of the growing strengths in U.S. manufacturing. It's a free membership. You can sign up to become an Invest Talk insider on investtalk.com. Just click on the Invest Talk tab.
888-99-CHART. We're going to go talk to Sean in San Francisco. How you doing, Sean?
Not bad. Yourself, Steve?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Hey, good. Hey, I had a question for you. Currently with a mutual fund, just strictly non-pharmaceuticals.
Okay.
I have with Fidelity. I am looking at long-term, but there's one fund I'm looking at, but it has pharmaceuticals in it. Is this a good long-term investment or... I mean, with it being dropping 15% and possibility of Hillary getting into office, I mean, do I stay away from pharmaceuticals or save to climb back in that ring, I'm asking?
I don't think you necessarily have to stay away from some pharmaceuticals, but I do. I'm a little hesitant about buying a mutual fund of pharmaceuticals because they'll have good ones and bad ones. And I think...
Yeah, it's a mixture of... go ahead.
Yeah. So...
It's a mixture of everything in it, but it has pharmaceuticals in it. So
I see.
I'm just trying to...
I wouldn't necessarily stay away from it, because remember, when something does poorly for any length of time, usually as a group, they'll eventually recover. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are situations and times when they don't, but I don't think you need to be completely away from pharmaceuticals. I don't. Even with Hillary, if she gets in as president, I don't think it's going to necessarily be detrimental to them. You know, they'll still push more and more and more of the healthcare law to be, you know, like Medicare. But think about Medicare and pharmaceuticals. We've had Medicare for a long time, and pharmaceuticals have done well. So, So I don't think it will destroy them. It might put a little pressure on them, but some of them are going to look really good. I kind of like certain parts of the pharmaceutical industry. I really do.
Okay.
So I don't think you should be frightened of them.
We'll appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Morgan Stanley says that they fear policymakers are making the same mistake that prolonged the Great Depression. If you probably don't remember, because, you know, who remembers that stuff? But after the initial crash and both in the stock market and the economy in 1930, the economy started to pick up around 1938, and then it crashed again. And one of the reasons is because of what happened, what they were trying to tighten the reins, you know, and the Fed started to move in and tighten it. They didn't do it the same way they do it now, okay, but it still was a tightening of the money supply, and it threw us right back into a recession, okay, in 1938. So here, fast forward to 2008, and both 1930s, early 1930s, late 1929, we had the same financial shock into the system. Now, the reasons were different and all that, but it was a financial shock. Banks had, remember the bank holidays, and a lot of banks went out of business. Remember that movie, It's a Wonderful Life, that Christmas movie where they're trying to keep the bank doors open because everybody had a run on the bank, wanted their cash? Well, there was a financial shock. Okay, what did that do? Well, that kind of, you know, what happened is everybody that was in debt was trying to get out of debt for years and years afterwards. Isn't that the same thing that we're trying to do here, private companies and individuals? Did we have that financial shock? We had huge debt. Okay, and so everybody was trying to repair their balance sheets. Investors are hoarding cash now. We're at a 15-year high in the amount of cash held out of the market. And of course, we're doing the same thing with our monetary policy. Make things cheap, 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 cheap. And now that's distorted. You know, look, I've just talked about the negative interest rates. That's distorted the free market system. And what did that produce? It didn't produce a lot of growth in the economy. All these European countries have these negative growth, negative interest rates. How are they doing? They're not doing very well. Monetary policy, about the money, is not working. We need some fiscal policy to do its part, and that's not happening. Fiscal party meaning the government needs to do something. Or, you know, I'm not even talking about what they should do. I'm talking about they should do something. You know, they could lower tax rates. Or they could spend more money on, you know, infrastructure. Or they need to do something. They've done nothing for years now. Nothing. Anyways. How about if we go talk to Art in Menlo Park? How you doing, Art?
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, I just wanted to get your take on Foot Locker. I was actually thinking about picking some up right around where it's at.
Okay, Foot Locker. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to get your opinion on it.
Okay, Foot Locker, everybody knows who they are. They make footwear, obviously. They have 3,383 mall-based athletic foot stores. All through U.S., Canada, Europe, Australia, New Zealand. And they're actually doing pretty well. I mean, they're going to make $4.72 a share this year. That's 10% more than last year. And next year, they're going to do another $5.16 a share. That's another 9% increase. And sales have been increasing 3 to 7% every quarter for the last 2 years. It's going to be up 4%. It was up 4% in the most recent. So sales are doing pretty good. So therefore, Art, you just want to buy this at a good price. And it's been coming down. It was a high of what, 77 in 2015, last year's high. I mean, this year's high has been 69, and right now it's at 53. So you're asking the right question. is this a good price to buy it? Should I buy it? It's fallen 3 or 4 days in a row. Art, I think this could be, but I'd kind of be a little bit patient. You really want to see if it holds. It made a low on the 23rd last year, May, and now it broke through that low today. So you kind of need to wait to see if it's going to bounce and hold that low. If it holds that low for a couple weeks, yeah, this would be a good place to buy. If it doesn't, So if it doesn't, just wait. Wait till you see it stop going down, okay?
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Art. Appreciate the call. Yeah, it's Foot Locker, everybody. FL, Foot Locker. I kind of like it. They have pretty good return equity, 24%. Pretty high. Good cash flow. Pays 2.1% dividend. I think it's a good stock to watch and one to pick up as soon as you know it's not, as soon as it appears that it's not falling anymore. Right now, it's just a bit too early to make that determination. I think it might be, but I would wait to see if it holds it. We know you have questions. Maybe some of you haven't thought of them yet. Are steel stocks a good buy in 2016? Steel. Why would you not buy them? Why don't you buy them? How can you invest in equity crowdfunding? Should you do that? How do you do that? I try to stay ahead of it for you. I really try to keep myself informed. But if we missed one that's been on your mind, don't forget you can ask. You can ask anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we'll play it on the next Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART.
If you have a question on our talking point today, the Critical Balancing Act, there's a link to a related article on our website homepage. Or you can send a note. To do that, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin, and they will get back to you. Now, Invest Talk Real Estate. Chevy Akison, real estate agent and investor, speaks with Justin Klein about treating your home as a retirement asset.
For most people, their home is a very significant part of their assets and maybe even their retirement assets.
We've talked a lot about this in the past, Justin, and you know what a lot of people forget about is the opportunity cost, right? So a lot of people that have owned properties for a long time have way more house than they really need. And so what I'm finding is a lot of times they have all that equity tied up in their property when they really need maybe a quarter or half of the house that they have, and they're forgetting about the opportunity cost of that money that's kind of locked in their property, right? So as you know, a house can be an asset, but it also can be a liability. So if, say, you have $1 million house when you only need a $500,000 house, if you can take $500,000 out by selling it and downsizing it, a lot of times you're going to make a lot better return with that $500 than just having it locked in your property.
Yeah, right? And you're paying property tax on that larger property, more upkeep on a regular basis, right, with utilities, et cetera. So it is smart, and we've helped clients with that as well.
We just recently helped somebody in Central California
exactly
to downsize, and that's going to be a huge benefit. I mean, if you're looking at coastal properties in a lot of areas of California, the cap rate as a pure investment is 3 or 4%.
Yeah, not very good at all.
It's not good. You can get them a lot better return than that. So
it just makes sense that you downsize, take that equity out of your home, own a place that is more tailored to your needs in retirement, mm-hmm. right? And take that equity out and earn a good, decent return on that, hopefully in a conservative manner, but you can earn a decent return, and that suddenly becomes a home that is, or a piece of asset that somebody has that now has dual purpose, right? It can produce income and produce a place for you to live. So it's a lot more bang for the buck in that manner.
Exactly. You want to turn your home into an asset. What's interesting is we've had a lot of clients buying coastal properties that ideally don't have HOAs, and our clients that are traveling a lot, they'll actually make it a vacation rental when they're not staying there. And they're getting their trips paid for, or even better. So it can be an asset, can be a liability. Most of the time, it's better for someone to downsize, buy a smaller property, and keep them separate. But some people have kind of a hybrid investment / home to live in as well, and we can discuss that option with clients as well.
If you have a question, 888-99-CHART is the number to call, or contact KPP's own licensed realtor and financial advisor, Justin Klein. Click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART. Guess who we're going to talk to? We're going to go to talk to Tim in Fremont. How you doing, Tim?
I'm good. How are you, Steve?
I'm good. Thank you for the call.
I'm looking for an entry on the stock NE and Nancy Ela Edwards. What's your thoughts, please? Thank you very much.
Okay, this is Normal Noble Corporation, everybody. Swiss company engaged in offshore contract drilling services for the oil and gas industry worldwide. And it, you know, you'll notice a lot of people are calling, trying to find the see if these stocks have bottomed and when's a good time to start getting into them now. Noble Corporation is a $2.1 billion company, so it's a good size company, small cap, but pretty good size. And they have, you know, pay a really nice dividend of 7.8%. Can they maintain that dividend? I think so. They're an $8.88 stock with a $5 cash flow. So they're going to make 54 cents this year. The bad part is they're going to lose 70 cents a share next year. So that's kind of a negative. They don't have a lot of debt, which is good. It's a very low-priced stock. I think this is the area that it probably, it got down to close to $7, and that was the ideal buy point. And it recently got close to back down to $8 and then bounced up, and now it's at $8.88. So it looks like to me, Tim, is put in a bottom here between $7 and $8. I mean, that looks like a pretty strong bottom. So this would be a good buy point. Will it hold here? Well, long as it stays above $7, I think I'd hold it because I think it'll recover. I really do. Okay?
Okay, thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it. It's always hard to know because think about it. It's at $8 now, and if it goes down to $7, and I'm telling you between $7 and $8 is a good place to buy, that's a huge percentage drop to $7. But, you know, because it's a small price, a low price stock, so the movements are dramatic in the price. And, you know, so, it, you know, and I'm telling you, it could easily go to $7, but this also could be where it's going to stop. $8 is where it recently found support, and that's where the strong support is, but that's 10% from here if it goes down 10%. See, so it's tough when the stocks get low priced. It, you know, the swings to get more dramatic percentage-wise. 888-99-CHART. Older workers over 50. One in two of them think they will be working when they are 70. One out of every two. 50%. Older workers who are over 50 think they'll be working. 50% of those will think they'll be working when they're 70. The problem is that these workers may not be able to have a job at that. 47% say they are in good health. That means 53% are not in good health. How are they going to keep working until they're 70 if they're not in good health at age 50? How? 40% feel stuck in their job, so they're not happy. 40% are not happy in their job, so they have poor health and they're not happy. And then almost 48% earn below $35,000 a year. So I think it's unrealistic to think that you're going to be working until you're 70 if you're one of these groups. If you're not in good health, you got to have good health to keep working. Or, you know, if you don't like your job, you know, you don't, do you think your employer is going to want you? Now, I know there's not supposed to be age discrimination, but I think there is. Might be subtle, but I think there is. So that's going to be tough. The appeals court recently upheld the net neutrality needs to continue. Net neutrality. That means, what does that mean? That means that the rules have to stay in place that treat the internet like a public utility. And you, if you own or run, you know, a telephone company, a cable company, you can't prohibit or block or treat any other web providers any differently. Everybody has to be treated equally. And that's been upheld. So I'll stay there. You're listening to InvestTalk, everybody. I appreciate it. We're moving into the last segment of our show. If you still have a question, we still have time. 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Judy in Redwood City. How are you doing, Judy?
Fine. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a question to ask. Is now a good time to buy dividend appreciation ETF like Vanguard or Schwab?
Okay. Buying a dividend appreciating dividend exchange traded fund. I think you're going to have a correction in the market. So, Judy, I would probably wait to see if we get that correction, and we'll get it probably sometime in the summer up until maybe October. So I wouldn't be in a rush to put money to work yet, but you know, it's hard. If you're a long-term buyer, you pretty much can buy that fund almost any time, and over long-term it will work. But I just think we are in for some softness in the market with the presidential election coming in, the Britain voting on leaving the EU. And, you know, we have a world economy that the International Monetary Fund downgraded growth. There's just not a lot of positives that makes me feel it's time to jump in the market. I'd be careful, but I do like that fund a lot, Judy.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let's get back to our 24-hour anytime listener line. We will pick up a question, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, I'm looking on the Yahoo Finance page, and it's showing the for the industries. It shows the statistics for the most recent quarters, specifically the silver commodity, and it's showing all the collective of all the companies that they track, the net profit margin at -60%+, and yet the price to earnings is zero. If you could please explain that, thank you.
Well, if you're not making any money, how can you have a price or earnings ratio? Because there's no earnings. Remember, so if they're saying that they have negative earnings on these companies, well, there would be no earnings. Therefore, there's no price earnings ratio because that is based on the stock price divided by the earnings of the company. No earnings? No, you can't. What was it, sixth grade math, seventh grade math? No PE with no E. There's no PE ratio. That's what they're talking about. So gold, silver, you know, even some oil companies, a lot of commodity companies didn't make any money when oil and all the many of the commodities fell like a stone. Don't make any money. And therein lies some opportunity, right? Because that means the stocks got crashed. And now, you know, you've seen what gold has done this year, but for the last two, 3 years, it got crushed. This year is doing great because the price of gold went up. So you have to kind of take everything. You know how I like to buy companies that make money, but I'll every once in a while, I'll take a shot at companies that don't make money. I mean, but you always take that risk, you know, with a reasonable amount of your assets. Okay, so when I look at our gold company, mining companies that we own, everyone is making money. Everyone makes money, has made money, and is making money. Okay, but very little money. But I like the growth prospects that we're looking at going forward. Yeah, so to me, it seemed like a good opportunity. So that's what you're looking at. Everybody, thank you for calling for today and listening to the show. I appreciate it. Let's try to answer. Well, maybe we can get one more text question in before the end of the show. I think we can do it. What are your thoughts on Zebra? Zebra. It's an industrial leader that has debt that is reducing. Other acquisitions of Motorola Enterprise, that's reducing, I don't get that. It hit a rough patch recently and is hovering around its 52-week low. Do you think it's a good buying opportunity, given that its products will blossom well once the IoT, Internet of Things, begin to take off? Well, Zebra Technologies manufactures direct thermal and transfer printers, RFID recorders, those kinds of things. It is a $2.9 billion company. Sales are shrunk for the first time in a recent quarter. Before that, they're growing very strong. It's going to make $6.24. It's a good price. Cheap. cheap. I think it might. So you just want to make sure it's hit the bottom, and I think it's very, very close to it myself. Okay? That's Zebra, Z-B-R-A. Time is up. Hope you found the time worthwhile. Appreciate it, everybody, for listening. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today, and let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.